Really, really nice. And so obviously I've just done Valencia, the Italian ones before. It's just another experience in the bank, you know, and especially UAE is quite unique style of racing, as you mentioned, you know, real sprinters world champs, but also those climbs are like a really pure effort. So again, it will be good gaining some more experience, practicing, you know, when to wait, when to go. Jebel Jais in particular, the first climb, from what I've seen, that's actually quite a tactical finish, especially towards the last few K.
G'day, legends, and welcome back to the Press Room Podcast presented by Zwift. Good to have you back for another episode. And today's guest, guys, today's guest is from Jumbo Visma, another prodigy, another talent, young talent who's instantly good on the world tour. It's Tom Gloag from Jumbo. Now, Tom is a UK rider. He's come up through the Trinity program. He is an absolute weapon. He did a couple of races last year at the end of the season, and now he's in the full-time World Tour team proper this season. And he's already got a GC podium from a stage race, finishing, I think, eighth, might have been Valenciana, something like that. And he won the white jersey as well. He's a really top talent. And look out at the UAE Tour. He's racing there with Jumbo Visma. I think in the final two mountain stages, he's definitely going to be up there, so he can move, guys. But this episode, I'm really excited to drop it because when I interview guests, everyone, I know straight away whether the episode's going to be a ripper or will I have to just work a bit more to get, you know, ask the right questions and just sort of work my way into it to get the best answers out of the guests. But straight away when Tom spoke, I knew it was going to be a good episode. He's a proper lad. He actually lives below Alex Bognar. So can you imagine that apartment building? You wouldn't get any sleep there between those two chatting on. But yeah, pretty cool. We talk about a range of stuff, including his heat training for the UAE, which I will post the video of what he actually is wearing because he goes and shows it to me. And in the pod, you'll hear it. It's pretty funny. But yeah, we talk about a range of stuff and I think you guys will really enjoy it. Tom is a great speaker. He's funny. And yeah, it's a cracker of a podcast. But yes, before we get stuck in the episode, guys, pretty cool announcement. I've been working on this for quite a while now. I now have a website for the podcast and also my racing commentary stuff, sort of put it all in one area. Okay, so tprcyclingnews.com. I'll link it below. It will also be part of the links in my little link thing and Instagram as well on the main page. So go check it out. You can see all the episodes there. It's a good way to share things, the latest YouTube videos. I'll post a bit of news and stuff every now and again, and a few articles that I'll write just with some of the information that I receive from teams and that sort of stuff. So yeah, if you want to support the podcast in another way, you can sign up to the little newsletter thing at the bottom. Every now and again, I'll send out some cool little updates, maybe some behind the scenes stuff as well. I'm not going to send you any rubbish, don't worry. So if you're signing up, you'll get some really cool content along the year. And also, it will be the way that listeners can get amongst some of these giveaways, okay? So Attacker, give me a whole heap of kit. We're going to be doing giveaways throughout the year. We'll play some games. We'll do little competitions. Same with Smith Optics, okay? The sunglass supplier and sponsor of the podcast. They've given me some product as well. So we're going to be doing some things this year. And the way to get amongst it and to get your name in the ring for this stuff is by signing up to the little newsletter form at the bottom of the website, okay? tprcyclingnews.com. And finally, another way to support the pod, if you would like to, if you think it's worth it, otherwise just keep listening. I've got a Patreon now, okay? It's in the description. Sign up if you if you've got the means to and you want to support the pod. It'll all go back into getting your equipment, such as I need to get a new microphone. I actually left it. I left my main microphone that I do these intros with somewhat in one of the hotels when I was over east doing all the commentating. So that's pretty funny. I have to get a new one. So you know, if you sign up for the Patreon, really great. It'll support me a lot, and I'll yeah, be sharing some secret stuff with everyone who signs up there. We'll call you out in the pod, etc., etc. Going to be really cool. But guys, most of all, thank you so much for listening. This is a cracking episode, okay? It's time to get stuck in the podcast. And I'll see you. Have you ever been to Oz?
Ah, oh, it's such a shame. I wanted to do Down Under this year, but They didn't take me. Hopefully next year. I'm really keen on getting over. I'm not keen on the cold. So
yeah.
I've been freezing out here. I'm in Girona at the moment. With a bunch
it's
of
snowing, isn't it?
Yeah, it was snowing last week. It was horrible. So it's okay. It's better now. But yeah, all the Aussies, because they come back from Oz summer, and they're all like, you know, like I know quite a few of them, and they're all just like, you know, they're like absolutely freezing out here in the in Girona. So yeah, I'm like, if they're that cold here, they must be lovely over there. So yeah I've always been a sucker for wanting to go over.
Yeah, definitely. What do you do when it's can you train when it's snowing?
I mean, it doesn't snow that much here, so when it did, I didn't ride. But yeah. Actually, I kind of managed to flip days round, and it didn't really affect things, luckily. So, I mean, you can, but also the snow's not really the problem. It's the ice, isn't it? It doesn't get. I guess it doesn't get that cold in Perth. In Melbourne, it gets quite cold though, no? Because on one side of Australia, it doesn't actually get cold.
Yeah, it gets pretty fresh in Melbourne, but you don't really get like snow. Maybe on a bit of the mountains, but not like you wouldn't get like the sleet on the road.
Yeah. You see, in the UK, I'm from London. And I went, yeah, it's just like, also the worst thing is when the snow melts and then it just destroys the roads. So our roads are just shit anyway. We don't look after them anyway, but like, especially when it's like that ice and then it cracks, not fun.
That's when you need the turbo. Are you an ergo man?
Do you know what? I'm going to hop on Zwift today, actually. Funnily enough, not even meant to be sponsor correct, but reffing the boys. But I've been riding it a lot this last week, actually. I'm preparing for UAE at the moment, and they've got me. Do you know what? Actually, I might give me 1 second. I'll show you what I'm doing.
Yeah, let's see
it. So they've given me this. Ridiculous looking. So I've got this suit here that looks even more ridiculous than it looks when I'm just holding it. And I've got to ride that on the turbo. I'm doing UAE in a few weeks, which is warm. So heat training, exactly. Which I've never done before. So actually, do you know Alex Bogner?
Yeah,
so he lives above me, and I'm using his full Zwift setup today.
Oh.
You know, he's got they've given him the TV, they've given him the turbo.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm gonna be in there in a hazmat suit, sweating. Literally after this, that's what I'm gonna go and hop on and do. So
no, it's gonna be fun. Wow. Oh yeah, Alex is a legend. He was an early guest. When he got him, yeah, he's top bloke.
Great guy, isn't he? I love him. I love him.
He's awesome. Yeah, real dude, eh? Real dude.
Yeah.
You've got to put that suit on, and that's just obviously it's going to make your body temperature increase, and you'll have the core sensor on. So
exactly,
yeah. The people who are listening, the core body temp is something that's been sort of jumped into the pro peloton last 2 years, maybe. It's like it's to measure your body temperature and how it changes in the racing. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I think, and especially for the team, it's something new that I don't know if anyone's done this yet. So certainly me, it's new for me. So yeah, the data side, I don't really look at that, luckily, because I have no idea what it all means. So, but yeah, I think for the coach, I'm not riding very hard on the trainer. It doesn't take, much of an effect with when you've got that on to get massively warm very quickly. So yeah, I guess it's just and also has, other than heat acclimatization, that's a hard word to say, acclimatization.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
There you go, got it. A lot of syllables. That's why I'm not an orator. So yeah, that thing is good, heats you up, but also I think it has other training benefits too. So we'll find out. It doesn't sound like it's going to be the most, Zwift helps, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be the most enjoyable experience. Normally hard training is quite uncomfortable, but yeah, I'll let you know after I've tried it this evening. So
it sounds pretty brutal. I actually studied quite a lot of heat training in endurance athletes when I was at uni. And
nice.
We had to do a couple of sessions, so a couple of training studies in a heat chamber in our university. And so the chamber is set to different temperatures, and you had to ride, it was like 4x5 minute efforts, and you had to do them in the same temp. You know, every week it would be a different temperature. So it'd be 7 degrees, which was fucking cold, and 7, 13, 25, and 36 degrees. And you had to do it with a thermometer, like, stuck up your ass. It wasn't that great. Like, it took a while to get used to that. But over
there... How does sitting on the saddle work with that?
Well, I don't know. It just... It went in, you just didn't think about it. But but the funny thing was, right, across the study, they were trying to work out at VO2, like VO2 max intervals, which temperature did your body perform best at, right? So then they can use this data to then make it, set the training protocols for stuff like what you might be doing. And of all, the power was highest across all participants for the 13 degree method. And it was lowest in the 35, obviously. It didn't feel like that because you weren't allowed to see the power when you were doing it. So you just had to go full beans and no screen, nothing. But the 7 degree one felt the worst because you were so cold. You couldn't actually feel if your legs were, cooking or not,
I know. I agree. The cold is always... The sensations-wise, it's I always find the hardest, because they kind of go numb, so you don't really have a feeling of anything. Whereas at least I think then in the heat, obviously it's not nice, but I think in the heat, almost you can almost see everyone suffering because it's more physical, like you see the salt on people's jersey and the sweat. Whereas in the cold, everyone's so wrapped up, you're hurt, especially in a race. You're kind of looking around, and then I can never gauge. Because everyone's got the, especially if it's really cold, you've got the balaclavas on and everything. You can't see. It's more of a, so many facial expressions, So, yeah, it's that's actually really, really interesting. Mm. And for you, was it the same for you? Did they give you individual results as well or just the group data?
Was
it 13 for you as well?
Yeah. Mine was 13 was the best for mine. And the next best was 25. And then, it was a bit lower. I think generally for most endurance exercise across everything in the heat, you're always like, it's like 2 or 3% less or something. And when you get like really dehydrated and lots of fluid loss, it's like you get to a certain percentage of fluid loss of dehydration. And like, it kind of exponentially affects your performance. Really cool. So it's one of those things. But UAE, that's it's a really fun race to watch for spectators because it's kind of the first hit out we get to see on the climbs, and then for the sprints, it's like the sprints are world champs almost. It must be pretty sweet to be on that.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, all of this stuff is pretty new for me. My first year kind of with the big boys. So, I don't really know what to expect. But obviously, we're going with Olaf, who's a world-class sprinter. So for him, I think it's pretty exciting to get stuck in right in the deep end with those guys. And from what I understand, it seems like it's pretty honest sprinting. The roads are so wide and it's just pure speed.
Yeah.
So, which is... exciting, but also for those guys it's up there with almost a tour level in terms of the start list you get for the sprinters. So it'll be super exciting for us to see where he stacks up, and for me to watch it from within the peloton, obviously not right close up all the time at the pointy end, but be for the team, it's super exciting.
Yeah, sweet. Will you be getting stuck into some of the lead out?
At the moment, not what I've been told, to be honest, just because it's not, I think, especially when I've raced with Olaf a few times now. I did Piemonte with him last year, which didn't actually turn out to be a sprint. It was I've done a lot of races that have been 50-50. Will it come back together? Will it not? And Valencia. Just gone. And I think he really prefers to have the guys, like he'd rather have less guys around him, but the guys he really trusts, So I think there's about five guys that get brought, well, including Olaf, so four lead out men. And then me and Seth for the Hillier days.
Cool.
So that's kind of the plan at the moment, which actually for us is also really nice because, again, I've not raced UAE before, but it seems like to have the lead out men there is actually really handy for the hilly days because it's really a big hit out on those motorways into the climb. Yeah, exactly. And then once you're on the climb, slot into a good position and then,
yeah,
you know, you don't need to do anything. You've either got the legs or you don't. So,
yeah
I think it's a really nice team.
It's a really good stage for someone in your position. I kind of, it's in, similar to last year with, I'm thinking about Luke Platt because, we were talking about the race quite a bit. And, you know, for someone who wants to, you know, have a crack early on the climb, see where they stack up, so to speak, you get a free run into it because it's that big highway. You don't have to worry about, you know, trying to position yourself before it turns into the climb. You get, it's US style racing and you can just kind of, you know, see where, like you said, see where you are. It's a good way to start for you and have a crack on those bergs.
Really, really nice. And so obviously I've just done Valencia, the Italian ones before. It's just another experience in the bank, you know, and especially UAE is quite unique style of racing, as you mentioned, you know, real sprinters, world champs, but also those climbs are like a really pure effort. Again, it will be good gaining some more experience, practicing, you know, when to wait, when to go. Jebel Jais in particular, the first climb, from what I've seen, that's actually quite a tactical finish, especially towards the last few K, where it's kind of switching in and out of headwind, tailwind normally. And sometimes, depending on how hard it's ridden, some guys have got lead out trains at the end and you wait for the sprint. Or sometimes Jonas a few years ago, he jumped early with a K to go and managed to stay away. So again, I think for me as well, that's really, if I've got the legs, that'll be really exciting to see that finale and how that plays out and kind of feeling in the race, what to do. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
And you were 16 in Valenciana, pretty good start, and the Young Riders jersey. Did you keep the jersey?
Yeah, I did.
First race of the year, just to get the Young Riders, that's pretty special, man.
Yeah, thank you. It was a great experience. Straight in, obviously level was pretty good. So it was really fun to see where I stacked up against those boys. And actually, they were quite tactical finishes because they were hard climbs, but not super, super hard. So
yeah.
It was kind of gauging. And what, and you know, you saw Ruby Costa on the last day. I think he was just, obviously he was, there were 8 or 9 of us that were kind of like decent level, but I think Rui just, you know, that, especially that last day, played it so well. And that was kind of what won in the race at the end. So it was really good to kind of already get put in those positions to kind of watch how the races progress. And I have, you know, obviously a lot to learn. So yeah, that was really exciting. It was good fun.
What room are you in, by the way? Is this like your little basement or bedroom or?
So it looks funny because we're in the, I'm in the old town and it's kind of like a lot of bricks and things like that, you know? So it's an older building. This is actually my kitchen, but we need some more drawers, I think, you know, I've just moved in. We were in another place before and you kind of move in and they give you some stuff and it's like, oh, you know, you need some more stuff for the shelves or whatever. But yeah, it's a funny little look. I'll maybe flick it around as well. Like a lot of bricks, you know, it's like a brick, just an older little building. So
it's kind of cool.
Something a bit different.
Yeah. What's it been like moving over to Europe, mate? Is it, I mean, guess from it's not far from London, but like it's still a big change, right?
Yeah. So I've been over for a year now and it's really good. Actually, I'm enjoying it a lot. There's a good community of Brits and foreigners out here. So that's really nice to kind of mingle on the social side. Also, especially the more experienced riders, when you go and train with them, you get a lot, and also off the bike, a lot of you kind of get to watch them and see, you know, this guy does this, that's really interesting, or how they approach different things and hear their experiences with them, because obviously they've been there, done that before. So that is it's really nice to be around, and obviously the better weather helps a lot. And not getting mowed down by drivers quite as much as in the UK is nicer too. So
mate, definitely some nice. Yeah. there's some shockers out there, right? Seriously.
Especially in London winter. The problem is, for sure, it's just even when it's cold out here, it's not, the roads just don't hold the water like they do in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just go when you, in the winter, when you go out in the UK, you just, whoa,
you get more wind from the roads than you do from the rain.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. For sure. Definitely. You have to be, as long as you don't turn soft, it's nice. So you got to keep a little bit hard. You got to make sure you're still trading in the bad weather sometimes and all this stuff, but you definitely get less ill as well, because also, especially in London, you kind of pick up when you go in. When it takes me half an hour when I'm in London to ride out the city and then half an hour to ride back in. So if it's wet, you're kind of riding through the buses and you pick, obviously the quality of training then is not great, and you're picking up kind of like oil from the cars and everything. So it's nice not to do that now. I think I've heard to ride straight out.
Yeah, I think I've heard Teo say a similar thing. Like, it just takes you so long to get out of, to get to your training, and that's an hour of shit really on the bike, you know.
And I mean, when you get to know the roads better, it's not as bad as people think. And actually for me, like, going back in the summer can be really nice, because I live in South London, and there's a great community of guys from there. Both the haters lived a kilometer from my house, Fred Wright. So I kind of grew up riding with those boys, and there's obviously a lot more guys around that too. So again, you know, when the weather's good, which is again a big kind of when or if, is great in the summer. But yeah, when it's not so good, not, you don't want to be there. So yeah.
Did you ride the track as well, Herne Hill?
I did, exactly. So I grew up for the club at Herne Hill, VC Londres, with those guys. A lot less successfully than the other guys, but that's where I started.
You must have been terrors. I mean, you and the haters and Ridey on the boards, like, geez.
It was good fun, but that's also the problem, because I grew up riding with those guys and I just got my head kicked in. I was like, bloody hell, like, these boys, you know. I literally like a kilometer from my house, just getting caned by the guys around me. I was like, What's going on here? You know, if I ever want to go up to whatever levels, and these guys are kicking my heads in. So luckily they're quite good. That's good for me. But I did ride the track.
It's always good when you're growing up, though, even when you're really good as a junior, to have someone better than you. You know, I always feel that's a huge part of development for junior cyclists. It's just you can't be winning and smashing everyone all the time, because you won't grow and you won't learn how to lose, right?
Yeah, but I think, to be honest, if you look at the guys that have come through from just this small club the last 4 or 5 years, a lot of it, we've got a really, really good culture of cycling in South London, which you wouldn't think. Whenever anyone asks me where I come from, when I say London, especially the Europeans, I always get a bit of a bizarre reaction. It doesn't quite, especially because I'm more of a climber. Yeah. You know, everyone thinks London is a city and, you know, climbers more from the countryside and all of this. Oh, no, there aren't really that many cyclists from the city. But if you actually look at it a bit closer, we have a really, really good community of not just riders, but also the we use the track every day. You know, Herne Hill was a full-time, it's an amazing facility with loads of volunteers and also lots of riders, not just the guys that have turned World Tour, but a lot of guys who are Conti level and who race for a long time and who go and then work in the cycling industry, for example. There's a guy working for Hexa right now. There's a girl working for Roulair. There's quite a few guys doing freelance stuff, whether that's on the gravel and social media or more as a photographer. So it's a really nice mix of people to go and train with. And then when you're young, you know, from the age of 10, when I was riding there, I was racing adults for straight away, you know, and they loved it. And like, that just moves you on so far. And every, you know, I never rode just every day. I just get to go and ride the track again and again and again and again. It was fantastic. And what a way to grow up. I was so privileged to be able to just go and ride my bike. And that was fantastic.
Yeah, sick. I was reading an article with you sometime last year. But in the article that you mentioned that descending was something that you would like to improve on. And this was sometime last year. And I wondered, over the off season, were you working on that at all?
Yeah, so
and how do
there's
you
a great question. And it's a question I keep asking myself to this day. You know, that's still the I think the biggest thing for me that I can work on, obviously physically I need to get better and all this stuff, but it's something that actually doesn't seem from my perspective that is talked about enough within the peloton. You know, I think there's a bit of a stigma around a lot of the time. I think guys just think, we're professional bike riders, and that you just assume you have this baseline competency with riding a bike. You know, I think everyone can ride, you know, I can get down and set in a race just fine, but how well and comfortable do you want to be? And Valencia was a good example of that, actually, because, you know, physically I was obviously one of the better guys on the climbs, but that could feel that real shift then when we got onto the descents, because I was definitely one of the least comfortable. Right. So over the off season, I have done quite a lot of work with a guy called Oscar Seitz, who works with a lot of the downhill mountain bikers. Right. He does the Swiss. He's the coach for the Swiss national team, for example, on the mountain bike, and he does he does a domestic team as well. Orbea, the Orbea factory team.
I think he did some work with Israel as well. I think I've seen this guy.
Yeah, Israel. He did some work with Mass last year. A lot of he works. He's the guy. If you go descending coach, he's the guy that you go to. So I've done three days. I did 1 day with him in November and 2 days in January with him so far, and hopefully I'll be able to get him again during the season as well. And he kind of basically outlines it for me. I'm starting from the bottom base, you know, like just like give me, forget, talk to me like I'm a 5-year-old. Get me in the parking lot, outline the technique, then get me onto the road. And then that was the first time. And then we start working a little bit on the lines. Also then implement, because on the car park now, the technique that he teaches, I can basically shift into that straight away. But on the road, it's then a different story. But then now on the road, I can start doing it comfortably. But then when the pace pushes, it's all about being able to do it under pressure. Yes. So I just need to be able to, because in a race at Valencia, for example, I think I got a bit stiffer at the first race of the season. I got a bit stiffer again and the technique kind of went. I need to just keep moving that forward. And basically, it's not rocket science, be able to implement good technique through the corners in racing. When the pressure's on, be able to relax, and then also be able to think about the lines, not go in too early. That's it, really. I've said a lot. I don't know how much. I've kind of switched around a little bit, but yeah, basically outline the technique, good technique, and then try and stay as switched on and relaxed as possible in picking the lines. And that's what we're working on through, you know, obviously practicing with him and watching his lines and the technique, and then also having just a really good muscle memory, you know, every ride, thinking about setting up for the corner, setting the pedals, you know, where the weight distribution is, everything. And also, yeah, that's it. Just practice. Yeah. So yeah, hopefully ingraining those good habits over time, and then hopefully become better. That's the game. We'll see if it works, but yeah.
It won't happen overnight, but that seems like, yeah, working at it over, you know, this year, next year, year after that, it's good to learn, like you said, from zero, rather than maybe trying to learn when you're 28 and you've had 10 years of maybe doing some bad habits. Very interesting.
And I think it's a lot of a mentality. You know? Like it's all about having that idea of, I want to improve this. Because anyone can do it, really. I think it's all about having that mindset of let's get better. It's not something that I'm naturally very good at. You know, there's everything that some guys are better at and worse at. But for me, descending is always, maybe it's because I'm from London and we didn't have many descents. It's also my build, I think, is not very, on the bike, I look a bit funny, probably to do with that as well. So yeah, a combination of things. But hopefully it'll get better. I have faith.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure if you would agree, but I feel like most professional cyclists would actually be afraid to admit that they're not good at descending. What do you think?
Yeah. It's hard to say. I haven't asked most professional cyclists. Also, they are, the reason I'm also working on it is I am not one of the better ones, you know? A lot of guys are better than me.
But like those groups. Those groups you were in at Valenciana. I mean, you know, Bilbao's there. He's one of the fastest downhillers going around. So trying to follow his wheel on, you know, some of those descents when you've gone over the top with the final group, like, man, he's rapid on the downhills.
Yeah. Here's a funny thing for me, because actually, like, following a wheel most of the time, I'm okay. From the, especially from the track, you know, you really have to, I don't know how much you, Australia is also quite a track centered country too, right? You guys have a lot of track racing out there, a lot of outdoor velodromes, and it's really, you have to commit, especially on the track, there's not braking. So I can follow, I have a lot of trust in the almost too much trust in the wheel in front of me a lot of the time. So I can really follow a wheel okay. But when I have to pick my own lines, I'm in trouble. You know, especially if I'm under pressure. So, for example, the last day at Valencia, as a team, we got the tactics a little bit wrong, and also I wasn't positioned well enough into the last climb. I got completely shipped. I was off the back. They went full titties. I was gone. Mohoric came past me at the top with Fred Wright and a bunch of those boys, and they hit the descent. You know, I wasn't, don't get me wrong, I wasn't comfortable, but I could ride with them on the wheel. But if I had to try and descend as fast as Mohoric on the front, he'd take a minute on me, easy. I think, you know, on a descent, or I'd probably just crash. Yeah. That's more than likely. I just, you know, I don't have. You watch Bill Bauer is a good example, Mohoric, but they've just got such a good feel for the bike.
Yeah,
Laporte training camp is an art. The way that he was literally on the hoods, and now, you know, I'm like, oh, we're going quite fast here. He just takes the lines differently. The weight distribution through the corners, wow! It's, you know, it's exceptional. It's really special to watch. They're so relaxed. Their heart rate probably drops way below 100 on the descent, you know, whereas mine kind of stabilizes and they're going faster than me. So it's a big difference.
Yeah, that's a good point actually about the heart rate as well, and just your general tense and mental fatigue as well, because you're so concentrating when you're still trying to learn. And I guess that's just really good descenders. They're saving so much physical, I guess, but also mental energy every time they descend. And then often when you're descending, you're getting ready to hit another berg. So, yeah, it's a big and underrated skill, like you said, as I'm not really talked about as much.
Yeah, and the aspect is just safety. You know, if you can minimize the amount of crashes that you cause yourself, you're going to be in the contention for more races, have less injuries. In general, like, it seems like a no-brainer, you know. And the craftiest bike riders, like, I think Simon Clark's a great example of an Aussie who can get himself around a race. He can read a race so well descending. I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the Poggio descent Mohoric did, I think Clark went faster on Strava than even Mate did in race. And you see, for example, the tour last year when he took that stage win on the cobbles.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, clearly an exceptionally strong rider and a ride that day. But was he the strongest guy in that group? Probably not, you know, but he played it exceptionally well. And that's someone where it's like he gets the best out of his physical potential, you know? So I think as well, that's something that I'd love to be able to do, is be able to obviously have physical strength, but be able to save more than other guys in other aspects of the race. And I think the Aussie Simon Clark's a great example of that.
Yeah, really good example. Are you a, when you're out training, are you a, do you like the cafe stop? Is that a part of your riding culture?
Yeah, I do. I have to be careful not to stop too much. So I allow myself, you know, if it's in the general rule of thumb, if we're going like, by around the 5 hour mark, then a cafe stop is good. If not, then I try and keep on. But yeah, I love a cafe stop. Obviously it depends on the time within training, but because otherwise you can just, especially in Europe, there are so many great cafes around that you can just sit in a cafe all day. So it's good fun, especially in the summer. I enjoy it. A good bit of cake.
It's a good bit of bike riding, especially maybe just in your off season, just in the summer, like you said, just going for a ride, going to a cafe with your friends, with your mates. Like, it's a great part of bike riding.
Yeah, really, really nice. And I've always enjoyed the social aspect.
Yeah.
I grew up through the sport in a club. So yeah, that's what it's about. And it goes to the core of bike riding. So I enjoy it.
It does. When you were coming up as a junior, and you know, especially in London, I wondered who was the cyclist or a person you were looking up to at that point.
Well, obviously Ethan and Fred have always they've been pretty exceptional cyclists from young. So those two guys were the immediate kind of pathfinders for me, because they were Ethan won KVK when he was a the kind of like the big. Basically, they were both winning big UCI junior races when I was kind of under 17. So those guys in the immediate vicinity were kind of like my go-to guys to look up to. But also, I think in general for the UK, Bradley Wiggins changed the scene completely. So, and he's also had, he has some connections to Herne Hill too. He's raced a lot there in the past. So yeah, he's obviously a big idol of mine.
Yeah. I always like Wiggo too. I always like Wiggo because not only was he a really good cyclist and, you know, one of the best ever, but he had a personality off the bike. And I always liked that about cyclists. And often, as a fan, you were watching the sport, and most of the time, the cyclists are hidden, you know. They're hidden behind their helmet, their mask, you know, their sunglasses. And then also, you know, the team has their own sort of media stuff going on. So often it's, you know, they're behind the sheet. So when you get to see a rider's personality outside the bike, and it's a little bit left of field, I just find that really interesting. So Wiggo seemed just like a really, he just seemed real as a cyclist.
Yeah, and something I really appreciate from Wiggo is his honesty. Not just, I want to say honesty, someone that I always respect, someone that goes, oh, I did this wrong, you know, this was something I did and I regret this, and you know, or I was really proud when I did that. I feel like there's a certain openness with him where he speaks his mind, and that's quite refreshing, you know, especially from someone that was so great. He, the first ever guy in the UK to win the tour was obviously massive for us. Olympic gold in the time trial the same year, have many Olympic golds on track in the team pursuit, and to have someone that great go, I did this wrong is remarkable, because obviously he was such an exceptional rider, you know, that appreciate the honesty, because he was obviously a very, very great rider and a good person. So it's always quite humbling to realize, oh, if this guy is saying, you know, that he did things wrong, then what, you know, how can I be honest with myself sometimes? So that's nice.
Did you ever get to meet him?
I haven't met him yet, which is a shame. His son also rides as well, and I haven't met him either.
He's all right too.
He's a good rider. So and I think he's in this. I was with Trinity for the last few years. Also sponsored by Swift. Yeah. They are. I think they have quite close connections with his junior team as well. So, he's training. I think he's on their training camp at the moment. So
yeah
it's a shame I haven't met him. I'm sure it's a small world, and especially with the Brits, that I will do eventually.
Yeah, no doubt. What else was I going to say? That's right. And onto Jumbo. First of all, it's fantastic to be on Jumbo Visma. I mean, that's just been amazing to get on their team and have the interest from them. But I wanted to know what do you think makes, or what stood out to you about Jumbo Visma when you joined the team? Obviously, last year you did a little bit of the stage air role and was a pretty good start as well. But what sort of stands out to you about the team that you think makes it such a successful unit?
Thank you. It's hard to put my finger on it specifically, but it's a very no ego environment. Obviously, this is my first taste of the top level of the sport. Right. From what I've had, it's really unique in the sense that there's a big respect for everyone in the group. And as a, for example, as a, you know, a whiny little neo pro compared to all of the experienced professionals of guys who've won multiple grand tours and monuments, the best riders in the world.
Yeah.
For example, I was on Speedplay last year, and I had guys asking me, oh, what was your experience with Speedplay or SRAM, and how did you find this and that? And that's a really unique environment where that even the best guys in the world, they just want to learn, you know? So that was really special for me to be a part of, and it's addictive. And for example, you watch the work ethic of someone like Primoz, and he's always you know, all the guys in particular, but they're always looking for things to get better. You know, he's the guy who will be the first up for breakfast, you know, doing extra S&C before he goes for a ride or go for a run. And then the guy after the ride who's analyzing the training or thinking about the next, you know, they're always doing more. And that's a really impressive thing to be around, because obviously he is the best in the world. And there's a reason he is, because he's working bloody hard. So That's pretty special to be around. And I'm really fortunate to be able to see it in action. And yeah, they're some pretty special guys.
Fantastic environment to be in. It all rubs off, yeah. Doesn't it?
Wow. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's for better or for worse sometimes. And I think Yumbo is an example of for better, that from the top down, it really compounds. That's what it looks like to me, you know, and then everyone kind of buys into the culture of really loving the bike. And that's something that's really special about it, is it's not really I don't view it as a job. And I think most of the guys on the team don't view it as a job. It's really a passion. It's something that, you know, luckily I'm being paid now, but it's not something that they do for the money. It's because they want to really go and race fast. So yeah. I think that's really special. And you get the best out of everyone when they start thinking like that.
Sick. Love that, mate. That's super interesting. Well, Tom, mate, might be time to let you get on the ergo and chuck that suit on.
I've been waffling away in hopes that we could just forget about that. But I'll give it a crack.
Love it. Thanks for coming on. It was so interesting to talk to you, and you're a very personal dude. The fans are going to love this one for sure.
I'm not sure about that. Thank you for having me on and let me waffle.
Oh, mate, love it. Super interesting. I'll probably drop this episode around, well, probably during UAE tour, actually. So it should be a good listen for everyone out there. But we've got a few new fans for you.
Cheers. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Legends, that's it. Another episode done and dusted. What did you think? I told you, Tom is a proper legend. Go follow him on Instagram. He's got quite a good page, actually. And it'd be interesting to see how he goes at UAE. I think at the UAE Tour, I think he's going to be right up there in the top sort of group one, group two. Well, no, I think he will be group one for the main climbing stages, the Jebel Hafit, Jebel Haiz, I think it's called. He's going to be up and about, really talented rider, and I'm sure you guys just became a fan listening to him. Really cool. And Tom, by the way, mate, if you're listening, thank you so much for coming on. Absolute legend. But of course, guys, thanks so much to Zwift, thanks to Smith Optics, thanks to Attacker, Cyclic as well. Sign up to the website, go check out the Patreon, think about it. Otherwise, tell a friend about the pod, and guys, I'll see you next week. Might drop another Jumbo Visma ride. I'm just waiting to see. I've got a couple. I'm just tossing up which will be next week. But two massive riders. One's a world champion, and one was a world champion only a few years ago. So that'll give you a little bit of a hint. Thanks, guys, and I'll see you on the next one.